G'day, welcome back to English History Fact and Fiction episode, the 317th War. Yeah, it's a bit like the number 9 bus, isn't it? There's bound to be one along any minute now. My name's Dick Newman. Let's get on with it. Just a little bit there of J.S. Bach, Sonata No. 1 for guitar, the Presto. Presto meaning you better warm your fingers up, boys, because this is going to be a bit tricky. Now, jumping straight back into the story, we had Carolyn dead, didn't we? Fred was not invited to the funeral. But the whole thing is a tragedy for Walpole. Who will be controlling George now? Walpole needs to figure this out so he can go back to controlling the controller. Newcastle will be saying Princess Amelia, the daughter, is the one who will get into George's ear. No way, says Walpole. George is controlled by that joystick he keeps between his legs. Let's have some real words from Walpole. Does your Princess Emily desire to commit incest? Will she go to bed with a father? Or does he desire that she should? If not, do not tell me the king intends to make a vow of chastity, or that those who lie with him won't have the best interest with him. I am for Madame Walmorden. I'll bring her over, and I'll have nothing to do with your girls. I was for the wife against your mistress, but I will be for the mistress against the daughter, unless you think the daughter intends to behave so as to supply the place of both wife and mistress, which, as I've told you before, I do not know how she can do but by going to bed with him. Yeah, where's Walpole's brain on this? It's in the gutter, isn't it? Gee whiz. Walpole will chat with the princesses, telling them that he had taken the side of Carolyn against Henrietta, but now he's for Walmorden, and she must come on in from Hanover. But in the meantime, George needs to put his dick in somewhere, so Walpole has sent for Mary Howard, Lady Deloraine. It's for the sake of his health, according to Walpole, and we know George has had Mary Howard previously, so Walpole tells the girls, people must wear old gloves until they get new ones. Now, according to history, the princesses, oddly enough, were not happy with Walpole and his message, and they never ever forgave him. The opposition reckoned that without Carolyn, Walpole's time is up. On the other hand, he was rather pleased that his first estranged missus died just before Carolyn, so he was able to marry long-term mistress Molly Skerritt. That will happen, and Mol will die 3 months later. Yeah, the poor girl was pregnant, had a miscarriage, and it seems that midwives still don't do the washing of their hands. 36 and dead then for Molly. In comes Ally von Walmorden. I don't know why I keep putting it on it. Walmorden. Oh, I don't know. Then she comes to St. James Palace. She was naturalised as a British citizen on February 1738 and created Countess of Yarmouth the following month. And for us, the story of Carolyn of Ansbach is over. That great English author, anonymous, though, will leave a sage message in the public domain. O death, where is thy sting to take the queen and leave the king? Yeah, we'd all be a lot happier if it had been George who died, not Carolyn. Oh bugger, with the dramatic dying from Carolyn, I missed an event. Oh well, let's have it. The Witchcraft Act of 1735 will show that we are now enlightened. The Act says it is a crime to say anyone has magical powers or is practising witchcraft. So no more killing women. No, just the opposite. You will be in trouble for accusing a person. More importantly, I missed a legal case from 10 years earlier, the rather famous case of Everett versus Williams. These are two guys who'd gone into business together on a verbal agreement to share all costs and profits equally. But, as happens, in one transaction, Everett thought Williams had taken more than half, so Everett will take his partner to court. Who cares, ho-hum, but here's the kicker. These guys are highwaymen. They're robbers. All we can do is attempt to understand why on earth this would happen. And all we can come up with is that Everett was bluffing on going to court, thinking Williams would cop up. But no, Williams said, no, I'm up for it. So they went to court. The court will not be impressed. The case will be dismissed as scandalous and impertinent. The solicitors will be charged with contempt of court. The barrister will be the only barrister in English history to be ordered to pay the costs of a court, and warrants will be issued for the arrest of Everett and Williams. I went down this path to illustrate a point about Walpole. A case then in 1735 will have a lawyer, Reith Cock, being busted as the leader of a gang of highwaymen. Read the case if you like, it's on the web, but if you do, then you're likely to come up with something like, this charge is all a bit bullshitty. Are you guys sure that Reith Cock is a criminal mastermind? The evidence is his business partner testifying against him. Could it be that the business partner stands to gain if Reith Cock gets convicted? It doesn't matter. Reith Cock will be convicted. He's guilty with a death sentence. It will be an appeal, and appeals get heard by the king and councillors, and they'll give it a fair shake. They're going to spend 3 hours on the thing with Walpole just saying, hang the bugger, we need to be tough on crime. Yeah, that's what I don't like about Walpole, his tough on crime stuff. It is the legal type saying, hang on there, mate, this all looks pretty shaky. It needs a royal pardon. Walpole will talk about Louis XIV, who was not noted for handing out pardons at all. No, he saw it as his duty to see the laws executed and the guys executed, and not to be some sort of girly king suggesting that the laws or the judges who pronounced justice were too severe. George will go for the mercy of transportation. But now we can have a villain enter our story. Yeah, no, he's not even really a bit of a villain, not really. He's mentally unstable, this guy. A stage was built for the dwarfish, garbage breath Prince of Orange to marry our terribly not good-looking, chubby, chick princess. Why hasn't Disney made a movie of this one yet? In any case, it's a new stage and there will be an incident with a bit of phosphorus and some sparks or whatever, a little bit of a fire. Oh no, it's a filthy Jacobite plot. The ghost of Guy Fawkes is back to kill us all. No. I told you, it's a churchy type with mental health issues. Okay, for us it's a churchy type with mental health issues, but for Walpole it is a vast underground network of filthy Jacobites. He has an informer who told him that was what was going on. The informer is promising even more information, but nothing in the way of evidence. Walpole should be keeping an eye on the streets rather than worrying about underground Jacobites. And so it came to pass, just like what happens in our very own times. We've been having the Irish poor turning up in England around harvest time. Oh, great. Great. That's fine. That's work we don't want to do anymore anyway. We don't want to be digging up bloody turnips. Let the Irish do it. Trouble is, the Irish have found they like England more and more. So they started turning up in the towns and the cities as well. And they're staying. And the Scots. What? The Scottish too? Surely not. We still hate those guys. But no, my dear listener, the Scots are turning up too. They're getting into the poor East End. Those Londoners, the poor people in the West End, were originally migrant Flemings or Huguenots, with the industry there being the lowly paid weaving stuff. The Irish are in there undercutting the labour rate, and it's upset people. Worse, the Irish are bloody Catholics. Now the employers know how to fix this. They'll announce a general reduction in the wages for weavers so everyone can get that lower amount that the Irish are getting. Fine. Let's now go and burn the Irish houses with the Irish in them, thank you. This will be a crowd of a few thousand and they'll be in business for 3 nights. Send out the Grenadier Guards to read the Riot Act. Yeah, nobody cares. Walpole knows what's going on here, though. Did you guess filthy Jacobites? Yeah. Walpole is fixated on the wrong thing. How about some more trouble for Walpole? Oh, yes, please. Hello, Sir John Barnard, rich bloke. Sir John has a cunning plan to reduce government debt. Now, governments all over the world are suddenly listening into this podcast. Has Sir John actually got a plan to reduce government debt that will work? Well, actually, they don't give a fuck, modern governments, but yes, actually he has. Hey, Walpole, you just need to reduce the interest rate on government debt from 4% to 3%. Now, if a solid money man like Sir John is proposing this, then there must be something in it. The opposition will say, great, we're in. But George and Carolyn hold government debt. If the interest rate goes down from 4% to 3%, they'll lose money. So the King and Queen are against the idea. The word is out, and other investors in government are crying out, it'll be the ruin of the nation to reduce the amount of money we get. Walpole will point out that Sir John Barnard has been against an excise scheme that would have achieved government savings without that ruin of the nation. Yes, rich people don't have to suffer. Speaking for the motion, Barnard will say there's plenty of people happy to invest in government at 3%. We could raise £1.6 million, which would end the necessity of taxing products like coal, leather, candle soap, all things that would benefit the poor. We know what Walpole thinks about benefiting the loser class. They just need to get up off their asses and become winners. But that does seem to be the attitude of the government, doesn't it, my dear listener? Barnard will be now subjected to rumour, smear and panic, as you do. His business will go to hell, we're all saying. But no, he will be business as usual. But Walpole will use the smear campaign that he likely initiated to say to Parliament, we can't put in his scheme because the money men would be offended. Barnard had won the earlier vote as he was outlining his scheme, but as we went through the smear campaign, more and more went to the no vote until finally it was defeated. A win for Walpole, a win for the rich, and a defeat for the poor as usual. But in fact, in about 20 years, Walpole's successor will reduce that rate from 4% to 3%, and Sir John Barnard will be involved with that. More unhappiness in business because, oh, we're looking at that war of Jenkins' ear. It's words about the Spanish in Parliament, arrested ships, rough handling of our sailors, and general unhappiness in the West Indies and South America. We have that agreement with the Spanish, which allows us to annually ship 5,000 tons of cargo and do some slave trading, because all that suits the Spanish, and they get excise on it. The Spanish say our English merchants are up to no good and are trading in limitless amounts of cargo. Elizabeth Farnese is still Queen of Spain and hard enough to be king as well for lots of the time. She's always up for a bit of biff, this girl. Cardinal Fleury is about 1,000 years old, and he's also still looking at opportunities. The Asiento Treaty that allowed this trade goes way back to 1667, then was updated 3 years later with an even vaguer treaty. But that was under the previous monarch, and England's done very well out of all that. But the world changes. The English merchants are most likely taking more and more, with the Spanish cracking down harder and harder. Our man in Madrid, Sir Benjamin Keane, is having a hard time. The English merchants complain to him, but he sees they've got no evidence. They just whinge about wanting restitution of goods and expect their word as Englishmen should be good enough. Yeah. Now, 1735 will give us the War of Polish Succession. Augustus the Strong died, leaving a son, Fred Augustus. Fred Augustus had converted to Catholic to ensure that he would succeed his dad. He also married the daughter of the Empress Sausage to get the Emperor's support. Okay, he's done the right thing, so he'll be elected King of Poland. But lots of us didn't know about the secret treaty. What? The secret treaty? Are we still doing secret treaties? The Treaty of the Three Black Eagles. Ooh, who are these three black eagles? Russia, Austria, and Prussia. Oh, and they had agreed that the next king would be Manuel of Portugal. Yeah, Manuel of Portugal, and not Fred Augustus. So we need a war to sort that out. France, Spain, Savoy, and Panama versus Russia, Holy Roman Sausage, Saxony, and Prussia. Oh, dear. For us, because on that first team is France and Spain. But we've got the Treaty of Utrecht saying France and Spain should not be on the same team. Oh, looks like our relationship with France is going out the window. Elizabeth Farnese wants England to give a hand. Well, maybe. Can there be a bit of quid pro quo? Perhaps Spain would like to give up those long-standing claims on Menorca and Gibraltar. And perhaps Spain would like to give us a nice free trade agreement so our merchants can trade their little hearts out. Yeah, nah, Walpole won't be asking for a cracker. On foreign affairs, his policy is do nothing. Newcastle, though, is not as inactive. A couple of years later, and he will send a rather strongly worded letter to the Spanish reminding them of our rights, based on that old Asiento of 1667. And crikey, mate, that's 70 years old and rather vague. Oh, a bit like me. But no, Newcastle somehow has read it as we have an indisputable right to sail on into American seas and do whatever the fuck we want, dagos. Your searches and arrests made on our marvellous merchants are now totally illegal. Oi, don't call us dagos, and why not get a lawyer to actually read that document, you English wanker? And all that would be, oh, whoops, on our part. Not so loud that the Spanish can hear us, no way, but Newcastle is stuffed up. For the Spanish, it is some sort of talk about the laws of nations or whatever. But the thing is, while we have our dickhead Newcastle on the coast, the Spanish are just as capable of putting Spanish dickheads in too. So, both countries now have dickheads on the job, and things will go rather badly. Just a little bit there of Handel's Parnasso in Festa, which he wrote for William and Anne's marriage. Anne's off to the lowlands to be miserable for quite a while. She didn't get on with her mother-in-law, and she thought everything English was better than everything Dutch and all that bullshit. Pissed off her ladies. Wing will go off to war, and Anne will say, I'm pregnant, which she wasn't, and then say she has to go and have the baby in England. So it would be in the succession, which he didn't. She just wanted to go to England. So William will find out, hit the roof, and order her back to Holland. But eventually she'll settle down and get on better with William and the Dutchies. But in the meantime, the Spanish will ramp up the searching of our ships and incidents multiply. The English investors, that is, the slave traders, are yelling at the government to do something. Warships will be sent to Menorca. Walpole is telling our diplomats to soften their words with the Spanish, and Newcastle will accept Spanish has the right to search ships within certain distances of their islands. On the other hand, if a merchant asks, they can have a letter threatening reprisals. It's a bit of a messy situation. The merchants will submit a petition. Up jumps one of our businessmen to rant about being a free-born Englishman and waving a bit of paper around saying, this letter says that 70 of our marvellous sailors are in chains in Spain. Englishmen in chains and slaves to the filthy Spaniards. We need to take action to protect our freedom and democracy. Yes, that freedom is certainly very important for our slave traders. Freedom to make money is the thing, not freedom for humans with black skin. Walpole is calmly refusing to be pushed into war. Nothing to do with humanitarian, just rational, just reason and logic for him. War's stupid for Walpole and your podcaster. It is a surrender to our primitive emotions. Let's biff it out instead of negotiating and compromising. Urging war and being nationalistic is what opposition politicians cry out for. They don't have to think about other ways to resolve problems. There will be a motion demanding that the House receive all correspondence with Spain. Yeah, what that means, if the House receives the correspondence from Spain, it means it's open to the public view. Let me give you Walpole's response.
You are a disgrace. Suck my dick and choke on it. Fuck you.
Yeah, he wishes. It is, without doubt, a very popular way of arguing, to talk kindly of the honour, the courage and power of the action, as any man can or ought to have. But other nations must be supposed to have honour as well as we, and all nations have a great opinion of their own courage and power. If we come to an open rupture with Spain, we might in all probability have an advantage. But victory and success do not always attend upon the side which seems most powerful. Therefore, an open rupture or declared war between two potent nations must always be an affair of the utmost importance to both. And as this must be the consequence of our present deliberations, we ought to proceed with great coolness and the utmost caution. While Paul will go on to point out that there are technical problems, delays, misunderstandings with foreign policy, Spain are looking to govern the West Indies from Madrid, which is bound to lead to problems. Local governors want to show they've got big cojones and give us a hard time here and there, but there have been plenty of ships just released. It works out in the end. As to the documents, well, Walpole will release bits and pieces as a government does. It's not always a good thing to release the lot into the public domain at one time. Things can be misinterpreted. And what about Spain? They may not want their documents released. So how about we ask Madrid that if they release their documents, then we'll release our documents. Walpole will get the vote 164-99. Now that's Parliament that he's won, but the merchants are not happy. In come the petitions in droves, and more petitions and even more. The merchants are sadly saying the government will have to do something. That's never a good idea, but do something they must. What about reprisals? Sounds better than war. Okay, reprisals it shall be, but is there something we can galvanise around? Some incident that will allow us to say, hey there, Dagos, that was a step too far, and now we're going to give you a smack. The merchants will say, wasn't there some story there of Guy Jenkins and his ear or lack of an ear? Bit old, but most of the population don't know what day it is, so sure, let's trot it back out. A Spanish officer, Juan Fandino, had seized Jenkins's left ear with his cutlass, slit it down. Then another of the Spaniards took hold of it and tore it off, but gave him the piece of his ear again, bidding him to carry it to His Majesty King George. Walpole thought he had safely made that story disappear at the time. He'd interviewed Jenkins, sent his deposition to be raised with the Spanish, then promoted Jenkins and popped him on a ship out of England. But those London merchants got wind of the story, and right now it's too good to ignore. They will get their top legal eagle on the case. There's not much in the records about the case, but Jenkins was summoned and turned up with something wrapped up that may or may not have been his ear to pass around the parliamentarians. Doesn't matter, because the media are now on the case, with the newspapers all going war against the filthy Spaniards for maiming our poor, innocent English sailors. The depredations of the Spaniards and their barbarity to our seamen require only a full and clear representation to raise the anti-it British spirit and fill every breast with the highest indignation and resentment against our adversaries, their aiders and abettors. Now, antient is just an ancient word for ancient. I wish I hadn't said it, but the point is, the media want war. War, of course. The Spaniards have taken plenty of our boys prisoner and have put them in irons and are starving them. Maybe. Let's cut to a direct quote from that very reliable newspaper, The Common Sense. The nation calls loud for war. I bet it doesn't. The nation cries loud for war. Yeah, Walpole's been trying to calm everyone down, trying and failing. And so the government sent warships to Menorca, hoping the Spaniards would see them and back down a bit. If we look at the other side, it does seem the Spaniards have been a bit worried about war as well, and were in fact looking to back down and calm their guys. But the sight of Admiral Nicholas Haddock smartened them up, and now Spain is on DEFCON 3. Anything else? Yeah. We're going to build up some troops in Georgia to prevent any possible Spanish assault from Florida. I'm talking about the Americas now, the North Americas. The Spanish are now certain that Britain is about to hit them hard with those soldiers in Georgia. Britain had no intent at all, but that doesn't really matter, does it? The guys at the top in both countries really want to avoid war, but it's looking inevitable. Walpole will have to make a top speech to Parliament to see if that can do the trick. My dear listener, you may have possibly worked out by now that I am not in the Walpole fan club, but do have a listen to his words, because maybe these are all right. I could never see any cause, either from reason or from my own experience, to imagine that a minister is not as safe in a time of war as in a time of peace. No, if we're to judge by reason alone, it's in the interest of the minister, conscious of any mismanagement, that there should be a war. Because by a war, the eyes of the public are diverted from examining into his conduct, nor is he accountable for the bad success of a war as he is for that of an administration. Yeah, big fat truth bomb there from Walpole. It suits the government to have a war because the public then don't look at other things that the government are doing. It's all about the war. There you have it. Walpole has just explained why the US is in a constant state of war. We can all be super nationalistic and do our USA, USA chanting while not worrying about whether the government is governing us well. Walpole actually said it to counter the charge that he was a cowardly custard and totally afraid of the Spaniards. He's not at any sort of risk from a war. He had therefore said he's not a big girl's blouse at all and prepared for Biff by sending a message to Madrid. The Spanish envoy, who was actually an Irish guy, will stop working with the opposition and making trouble for Walpole and get all fair dinkum with negotiations to see if this war can be avoided. Great. If we're talking, we're not hitting each other. There will be charges and countercharges and wrongful arrests and confiscations and actual smuggling, whatever. What the adults in the room are trying to come up with is a realistic picture of what's going on so we can sort out a new agreement to cover the position. The trouble with all this is the POMs need a win for their unhappy merchants. Reparations is the key. England will kick off saying, we want £200,000. No way, Jose, is the Spanish response. Okay, we'll take £140,000. Yeah, not a chance. Our man will drop it to £95,000 on his own authority, and we think he's gone too far. That is our ambassador in Spain. Spain will come up with tricky stuff. The POMs have got away with £68,000 worth of trade they failed to pay Spanish customs duties on, and yes, my dear listener, I am certain they pulled this number straight out of their ass, but let's say you owe us on that, so how about we forget that, then we can all be happy with £95,000. Oh, yes, okay, that'll do. We've got some stuff we can feed to the media. But just one last thing from the Spanish. We need you POMs to lend King Phil £27,000 to help him pay the £95,000. And look, we're not even talking about the three Spanish ships that Admiral Byng took in Sicily in 1718 that you promised to compensate us for. Okay, we can shake on that deal with Walpole, marketing it nicely to the British public. He's got enough there to turn this into a mighty British victory over the filthy Spanish. No, actually, we can't shake hands just yet. You see, my dear listener, I've fired several warning shots your way about a new phantom menace or axis of evil or whatever you want to call the fuckers. The corporations. There you go, that's what I'm talking about. It's the South Sea Company. Oh, dear. Dear, dear, dear. They've gone back to their books to find more nicely creative examples of money the Spanish owe them. And they want that money. Oh, yes, they do. Profits are way, way, way more important than peace. But anyway, we've pretty much done the deal on Spain paying $95,000. So if the South Sea Company aren't asking too much, then perhaps we can salvage things. So what do they want? £484,000. Can you prove that, South Sea Company? No, you can't prove it. Stiff shit, South Sea Company, says Walpole. He's no 21st century type of politician looking after corporations over the people. Too late to make a claim. I've done the deal with Spain. Convention of Pardo. Pardo being the name of Spanish Phil's happy palace about 10 miles out of Madrid. It agrees on the £95,000 and sorts out the border between Georgia and Florida, leading to the Georgia mob saying, oh, we're being sold out to the Spanish. Yeah, no, you're not. You're just typical noisy old white men. Always looking for something to bloody well whinge about. Well done, Walpole. Not. Yeah, not for the media. The Daily Gazetteer wants war, bloody war. Yeah, that war, bloody war, that's what they're saying. Spanish Phil is now very cross indeed, so he's saying, I can see where you've gone wrong. It's the bloody South Sea Company who owes Spain money. If they don't cough up, then the asiento will be suspended, and that will be 4,800 black humans you can't sell every year. Yes, and what about those 4,800 black humans sold into misery every year, my dear listener? Should we care about them? Well, we should, because there are about 5 white humans alive at this time who think that perhaps slavery is a bad thing. Then again, Rodrigo Borgia, Pope Alexander, told us it was their own silly fault for being the sons of Ham and therefore destined for the American slave owners. Spanish Phil's outburst was nicely timed to give our media time to perhaps reflect. While Paul thinks that both Spanish Phil and the South Sea Company are full of piss and wind and can be ignored. Time for him to get Parliament to ratify the Pardo deal. Plenty of people sing about freedom, don't they? That was Toya there. I think she just wants freedom from social norms. Not the sort of freedom that those black guys are looking for. While Paul can talk about how Spanish Phil had demands from both British and Spanish merchants. Look, I understand the guy. He's got both his own and our merchants onto him. But he's decided to make reparations to our subjects. That's nice. And we'll be able to get on with nutting out nicely how we'll all work together cooperatively with mechanisms put in for dispute resolution, and we can respect each other's rights and privileges and so on and so forth, and we'll get a recipe for pineapple paella. There we go. Mostly my words, but that's the gist of it. He's saying it'll be reasonable. Ayes 234, nays 141. All those petitioning merchants, though, think that the Pardo deal is just crap. Those 141s voting against are also totally stirred up and led by William Pitt, known for his thunderous speeches, full of lovely quotes for the media. Are we still a nation? We have the best navy in the history of the universe. And don't forget, we have 2 million white humans in North America, each and every one a proud POM willing to sacrifice his or her or they or them's lives for freedom of our proud commercial types to remove the freedom from the black mob and sell them at a very handy profit. Oh, hang on, I might have gone off track there. Let's pick it up here. If with more ships in our harbours than in all the navies in Europe, with more than 2 million of people in the American colonies, will we bear to hear of the expediency of receiving from Spain an insecure, dishonourable conviction which carries downright subjection in every line? The headline in the papers will actually be No Searches, and if you read on, the grievances of England admit to but one remedy, a very short and simple one, that our ships shall not be searched on any pretence. Trouble is, we all know that the English ships are trading unlawfully and carrying more goods than allowed under the Asiento contract. English criminals are very pleased. What we want is free trade, but that requires other countries to also want free trade. William Pitt can thunder. We saw on the part of Spain a usurpation, an inhuman claim exercised over the American seas. Yeah, my dear listener, interrupting trade is inhuman. We are British. It is an undoubted right by treaties and from God and nature declared and asserted in the resolution of Parliament. Oh, shit, we seem to be calling on magical creatures who tell us all about British exceptionalism. What a dick of an idea, unless it's the 21st century and US exceptionalism. One nation under God and in God we trust. Other countries are looking at Britain saying, hey, this is all getting a bit dangerous. Britain is treating all other countries with a bit of contempt about its duty to international law. Pitt is doing his best to get a war started by talking about national ignominy, and the complaints of a despairing merchants and the common smellies are all calling for war. Yes, all the common smellies are calling for war. Bullshit. While Paul is talking up peace, and hey, Pitt, have a look at these international treaties and notice we signed them. Should we toss out common justice? Well, we signed off on the Asiento, which says there will be zero British trade in the West Indies except that which is covered in this deal. If our guys are breaking the deal, surely our ships never ever be searched? And look, mate, if we start a war, are you certain we could win it? Other countries are looking at us right now, and they might just decide the Spaniards are in the right, and we're becoming overly aggressive and need to be put back in our box with a bit of extra biff on the way. It's all very well to call for no searches, but there's no such thing as free trade at the minute. We haven't thought it up yet. How would we react if the Spanish just started trading here? We would be outraged, and that's what they are right now. We need to sort this out by law and consensus. We're in danger of having our Asiento cancelled, and then we'll have no bloody trade at all in the West Indies. Now, let's vote, and it's a win for Walpole, but only just. 260 to 232. What's wrong with these dickheads? Like, it's the same thing today. You've got US warships in the bloody South China Sea. If you sail Chinese warships into the San Francisco Bay, well, shit. Yeah, the Americans would go nuts. The Tory leader, Sir William Wyndham, is not happy with this. I have seen with the utmost concern this shameful, this fatal measure approved by a majority of but 28, and I now rise to pay my last duty to my country as member of this House. Oh, well, that's shaken absolutely nobody. A bit of acting and a nice dramatic leading out of the Tories for a good hard sulk. That's fantastic if your name's Walpole. All those opposition votes walking out. Walpole can drag out the old, anyone who opposes us is a Jacobite speech. And in this case, he's actually right, technically. Wyndham had done a bit of time in the slammer for being a Jacobite and opposing German George's glorious reign. Anyway, it shuts down the warmongers from being total heroes in their own minds, bravely fighting the Spaniards from the safety of Parliament House. Oh, look, there go some opposition Whigs out in support of the Tories, leaving Walpole to get on with domestic matters. Legislation on the world trade, changing a proposed new timber bridge for Westminster to a stone bridge. And to celebrate West Indian sugar coming in, it can be duty-free. Nothing can go wrong. Yes, of course it can. Did I not just say we now have corporations? Yes, the South Sea Company are due to pay Spain duties of £68,000, but Spain are making threatening noises about the Asiento, so the company will refuse to pay. Look, look, South Sea Company, you owe it. You owe it. It's nothing to do with what else is going on. You owe that money. Wankers. Spanish Phil will say, well, two can play at that game, so we ain't paying you what's due in the Pardo thingy. Time passes and Phil says, OK, Asiento is suspended and that there is a breach of the Treaty of Utrecht and the war party haven't got much stopping them now. Cabinet will meet and not actually declare war but will issue strong measures. That's what governments call provocation, strong measures. In comes Captain Haddock, just sailed home to be told, off you go again, mate, and if you want to be a bit hostile towards the Spanish, then perhaps we'll be OK with that. Rather than a bit of plain speaking to the Spanish ambassador, Newcastle will tell him, hey, all that stuff to Haddock is just for nice reports in our local newspapers saying the government and Navy are being strong. And hey, if you could give up your right to search our ships, then we'd all be good. What, says the Spanish ambassador? Our right to search is what this whole bloody thing's about. Not sure how that got past you, Newcastle, old mate. But our Spaniard is saying order, then counter-order, then belay that order, and, well, we're a bit chaotic. We don't have our act together. We're drumming up war, but the guys in charge still don't want it. Perhaps we should check in on our king to see what his attitude is. A war? Oh, fuck yeah! George is just about orgasming over the thought of our lovely bangy stuff and blood and guts going everywhere. Well, keep it in your pants, George. The Frenchies will soon sort you out for a war. Anyway, George right now is under Walpole. We want a war, Wally. We want it. Walpole will say, yeah, nah. I'm a peacenik type, happy to resign. George will boo-hoo-hoo and say, are you deserting me in my hour of need? Walpole will allow himself to be talked out of the resignation. It's not just George. Newcastle's also keen on war, so perhaps we should take stock of Europe. We'll be right back. Yeah, my brain isn't that far on the fritz. I do know that's Scotty music, not European music. Just toss it in as a handy reminder to myself to say, at some point coming up very soon, Walpole's actually going to be right about the Jacobite threat. Yeah, state of Europe. Newcastle is on good terms with the Sausage Emperor. Spain is pretty much a client of France. What's good for Spain is good for France and bad for the sausages. Longer term, then, what's bad for the sausages is bad for Britain. Now, I'm not saying that's right. I'm saying that's how Newcastle thinks. Spanish Phil's younger son has married Louis XV's daughter, tying the two a bit closer. Now we know that, some of our ministers are seeing that if we do a deal with Spain, then it will work for France, then it will work against the sausages, and then against us. So it's a bad idea. Yeah, look, I might as well try and explain to you why 3 is 1 and 1 is 3 than explain the mind of a government minister. Rather than declare war immediately, our government will do what governments do and get into some economic warfare. That is, we're going to look to pirate away at Spanish bullion ships, as we do. Nobody though really expects we're going to find a way out of this now. We're going to formally declare war at some time in 19th of October 1739. The money men at the Royal Exchange will all be huzzaing away. Huzzah, huzzah, it's a war in support of commercial interests. Heralds are out to let the common smellies know. Our Prince of Wales will drink a toast to war. Bells will ring. Walpole, the psychic, will say, they're ringing their bells, soon they'll be wringing their hands. Now we might ask, why did Walpole not resign? The guy's a peacetime Prime Minister. He could have resigned and say, oh, I told you so, over and over and over. Then he could have made a dramatic comeback at the end of the war. But Walpole eats, drinks and craps politics. He will stay as Prime Minister, leaving the war stuff to Newcastle. Newcastle's policy is that the war will be fought in American waters and that politicians should not be second-guessing the warriors, so get on with it, lads. Captain Vernon will be off to a great start. A really good idea is to take Portobello in Panama, and he will take it. Well done, now Admiral Vernon. Ring the bells, and whatever was Walpole scared of. What's next for Vernon? Defeat. Okay. Part of this problem was that Rear Admiral Sir Chaloner Ogle has decided that he and his 25 ships will sail when they're ready, and they'll be ready when they sail, whenever that is. About a year is what it is, and then he'll sail straight to a storm. We can recover for that, and now we're heading to Cartagena. How many times has that location come up for us in our history? Well, here it is again, and again we want it because, again, it is the precious, by which I mean we should find plenty of Spanish gold in there. We have a military commander, Lord Cathcart, ready to take charge and leap into action as soon as we arrive at Dominica. Here we are at Dominica, and Lord Cathcart will promptly drop dead. Well done, that lord. Who should take over? Vernon or Wentworth? Vernon or Wentworth? Well, they both think it should be them. So we'll have two war parties forming, and that's never, ever a happy situation. Let me take you on a quick side trip to the word grog. Grog, my dear listener, is actually rum that's been watered down by a filthy captain. Bloody arsehole not giving us our full ration. So watered down rum is called grog. The word grog is abbreviated from the word grogham, which is a cloth used to make coats that Vernon likes to wear. Because he is always seen in grogham coats, he is known to his men as Old Grog. And because he waters his rum, that drink became grog. And there you know. Let's get back to war and having two leaders. One is described as a man of weak understanding, strong prejudices, boundless arrogance and overboiling passions. And the other is described as wholly defective in point of experience, confidence and resolution. So there you go, take your pick between those two. As for our soldiers, we note that their experience is more along the line of ploughing up fields for turnip growing. Okay, let's attack. And, look, we'll take the Spanish flagship, the Galicia. We've got it. That'll give us 16 extra guns to point at the town. Great. But the town is defended by Don Blas de Lezo, who might only have one eye and one leg, but he's got a ton of pluck and experience. Send in our brave boys with their sturdy ladders to breach the walls. Did anybody remember to measure the ladders? Yeah, okay, well, they've got to get to the walls first. And the problem is it's very bloody hot. But here we are at the walls and, the ladders are a bit short. In comes one of Ogle's ships, finally, the Chichester, which has already lost 100 men. Not to the Spaniards, but to disease. And that's just one ship. By the way, about 200 brave boys have failed to return from the short ladder exercise, with another 400 wounded. By now, we have figured out a fair bit more about diseases, and that diseases from Africa will kill us nice and quick. Why mention this? Well, we're using slave ships as troop transports. So, what's killing us already has a name, the African Slave Revenge, a known killer of white guys. That is disease that's managed to survive on a slave ship while fresh white guys come on with no immunity. We've also named yellow fever, the American thing, which will change your complexion to yellowish with some reddening, and you can expect to do lots of spewing with the final kicker being blood coming out of whatever holes you have. Eyes, ears, nose, whatever. Our troops and sailors are not having fun yet. Yes, marvellous work there from the cotton picking kids. Boone will take a couple more towns, but Cartagena will not fall. Nor will we stop Spanish and Frenchy warships from sailing on in. It will be a withdrawal for our lads in a war that is not ready to end yet and can go on costing a heap of cash. But look over there at Austria. Charles VI is pretty darn old and ready to die. What's he got in the way of heirs? Girls. Oh, dear me. Chazza, therefore, has spent years and years on a little thingy he liked to call the pragmatic sanction, which said girls can inherit. To be fair, he got the thing together and people signed off on it, but is the empire really ready for a girly emperor? Oh, perhaps not. While on this subject, you may wish to know that Chazza himself was into boys more than his missus, particularly his master of the horse, Prince Schwarzenberg, and a hunter's boy. But really, the love of his life was Michael Joseph, Count Alphen, a groom of the bedchamber, who he called my only heart, my comfort, my soulmate. Yeah. Less time banging Michael Joseph and more time banging his missus may have turned out an heir. Anyway, Chas VI is dead, leaving the treasury with about sixpence in it, and a stuffed army because nobody's getting paid, so army guys are just wandering off and going home. Good luck, Maria Theresa, who is technically now our very first girly emperor of the sausages. Yeah, that won't become official. Over in Bavaria, Fred William has died and had kind of reconciled with his lad Fred, who will be Fred the Great. Fred William may have had a bit of trouble with Fred's lust for men as well, rather than Fred's lust for women, because he doesn't have much lust for women. He's got lust for men. But now Fred is King of Prussia, and Dad left a nice military for him to play with. Off he goes then to invade Austrian Silesia, which he thinks should be his. Nobody thinks this young gay king who likes to play the flute will be much good at the military. Oh, hang on, he's just had a brilliant win at Mollwitz. Now George is rather interested in what's going on over here. If Fred were to win, then in the peace talks with the Empire, bits of Hanover might go to Prussia. That's a bit more important than being all chivalric towards Maria Theresa. The won't really be the Empress or Emperor or whatever. No, she can be the Empress because her man will be the Emperor. Oh, spoiler there. Anyway, chivalry is not as important as hanging on to Hanover, nor is loyalty to the whole Habsburg family that important really either. George will declare he is neutral towards Prussian aggression. Great, just what we want from our king when it comes to a family squabble in Germany. Trouble is, Elector of Hanover George had signed a deal saying we would help out in a family squabble. Ooh. George will be off to see Parliament to say, hey guys, Maria Theresa has asked for help and help she will get. She wants 12,000 of our bravest boys. Oh, big groan from Parliament. Hang on there, Parliament. So I have asked Denmark and Sweden to provide 6,000 brave boys each. Oh, that's an excellent idea, and let's all make fine speeches about fighting for freedom and democracy and how marvellous war is and the need to stand by our allies in their hour of need. Pulteney will be on about how we need to form a grand alliance to protect Europe from the House of Bourbon. Hey, calm down, mate. You're looking to stir up another big war. Walpole had done his best to bury the war idea, but here we are again. Parliament will vote to send £300,000 to Mary Theresa. Hang on a tick, says at least one voice from the opposition. Have you lot forgotten the Act of Settlement? It said, we will take one stupid fat old German to be king on the basis that we did not get tied up in stupid foreign wars on behalf of any of his sausage mates. Oh, dissent in the opposition. But there is also dissent in the government. Walpole is, of course, against war, while Newcastle is, of course, for war. The opposition will have a crack at a place bill, which I don't think we've covered, and I don't think that will happen right now. Let's just say it's a sort of early version of a vote of no confidence. Oh dear, 222 for and 206 against. This doesn't mean anything real for now, but for Walpole, it is a signal that his government is in trouble, and that can be contagious. Walpole should have cultivated the prince and his faction. But Walpole will cop a break with the death of Sir William Wyndham. He's a big dick in the opposition. He was the guy that the Tories trusted rather than Pulteney. We can all see that Pulteney is out for himself, whereas Wyndham was genuine wanting reform. The opposition is wavering, but will still put up motions to recommend to the King that Walpole be dismissed. Motions because it will be both the Commons and the Lords. It's all about Walpole's weakness, which is, of course, foreign policy. Walpole has looked to stay mates with France, and what's that done for us? Walpole's policy has seen the Emperor miss out and France grabbing stuff from the Empire. Another blow comes when we point out that governments do make mistakes here and there, but this one comes from Walpole being sole minister. He has concentrated all the power on himself, so must take all the blame himself. Fair call, really. It's also the case that Walpole has had all this power to himself for way too long. Oddly enough, we will get Edward Harley, who is the nephew of our old power player Harley, who can see that we're trying to impeach Walpole without due regard for the law and courts. Harley's uncle had been stitched up, but rather than seek revenge, this Harley will look to support Walpole, or perhaps really, he's going to support the proper process. That's what he wants to support, not Walpole so much. Walpole, for the defence, will, as usual, be rather good. He'll be light-hearted, confident, assuring parliamentarians it's all good. To the Tories, he'll talk about the opposition Whigs and Patriots. These are clever fellows, but we know, don't we, you and I, that they're just looking for jobs. In particular, my job. Whatever you might think of me, is there any real point in making change to one of these? The Tories are all thinking that perhaps Walpole's got a point. Would Pulteney in charge be any better? Plenty of Tories won't vote at all, and some will turn against Pulteney and vote for Walpole. 290 for Walpole, 106 against. Not bad for a Prime Minister in charge of a war that's going nowhere and has made a cock-up of foreign policy. The Tories have perhaps missed the point and an opportunity. Shall we be in 1741, an election year? Let's shall. Walpole is not defending a huge majority so much as defending his own credibility. Worse, the Prince and his Cornish seats won't be going to Walpole. In Scotland, Argyle is shitty with Walpole, and there's a dozen seats there. On the plus side, the opposition is split, but the government is hardly united. Let's get to the results. Whigs 286, down 44. Tories 136, down 9. Pulteney's mob 131, up 48. The new parliament will meet, and one thing of interest is that Walpole will ask Pulteney if he wants to debate the state of the nation. Pulteney will be up for it, but the point I'm making is none of us do that anymore except the US. They love the idea which allows their president to stand up once a year and say how great things are, while not mentioning any of the old things that may not be going so well. Yes, I think the rest of us see it as an exercise in bullshit, and parliaments can make enough bullshit without any encouragement at all. bring in the first petition, which will be about a disputed election result in a corrupt Cornwall, and the government will win with a vote of 222 to 215. Now, that's a very bad look. Sure, it's a win, but 44 Whigs have voted with the combined Tory and opposition Whig mob. The opposition are pretty happy. It's the start of a government term, and what you want as the government is big victories, not something like this. Another petition about Denbighshire, where Sheriff William Middleton returned his kinsman, John Middleton, although John had been heavily defeated at the polls. Another narrow win for the government. Perhaps it's time for the opposition to start probing at the procedures used in examining these petitions from defeated candidates. We probably aren't looking for misconduct, because we all know that, yeah, there's plenty of misconduct. The Whigs will vote for the Whig candidate, and the Tories, if they had the numbers, they'd be doing the same for the Tory candidates. It's more about looking at a lever to get a change in government. Step one is to get your guy in as chair of the committee to examine the petitions. Whigs are going for return of Giles Earle, who is a Walpole man, but who has made enemies. Tories will put up Dr. Lee, a church lawyer, and opposition whips will get about their work, getting MPs in from their sick beds and approaching wavering Whigs, and they will score. 242 for Dr. Lee to 238 for Giles Earle. My advice, my dear listener, for when you have two mobs is to shout with the loudest, and the opposition are getting amped up. Walpole will find guys deserting him with more petitions to come in. A message will be sent to Prince Fred, who's still on £50,000 a year. Hey Fred, while you're here, they tell me you have a number of votes from your Cornish mates you could send my way. They would see not only a pay rise for you to $100,000 a year, but a bonus of $200,000 for the 4 years you've been getting by on a miserly $50,000 a year. Tempting, but then remember, if Walpole goes down, then that's one in the eye for George. Here comes a petition, and this time the government loses. Opposition win. That must be it for Walpole. No way. If Walpole goes down, it'll be down in a blaze of glory. Pulteney will propose a committee to examine all the papers on the war. This, for him, is the killing blow. On with the debate, and people are besides themselves with the quality of speeches from Walpole, Pulteney, Pitt and others. This has been a big deal, with both sides praising the other for spruiking their finest of fine bullshit. Men had come on in and crutches to hear it. Sir William Gordon was told he was dying, but he still got in there, with a flannel hanging out from under his wig. A dying man who thinks that voting against the government is a big enough deal to get him off his deathbed. 11 p.m. and the vote is 253 to 250. Walpole has survived once again, but more petitions are due in. One comes in from Chippenham. That will see the government lose on a technicality, but finally Walpole can see the writing on the wall. Nothing, though, was said. 2 days later, and we get the proper vote from Chippenham. It's presented. Chippenham declared for two opposition candidates, Edward Baynton Rolt and Sir Edmund Thomas. That was because the two Eds had brought in armed men to terrify the voters into voting for them. They also invented charges against the sheriff so they could toss him in the slammer while the vote was going on. So the two Whig candidates had an excellent case. Open and shut, is it not? But too late. We want the Walpole thing over, so the vote will go against the government by a startling 16 votes. Never ever think that our governments and oppositions are interested in fairness or justice, my dear listener. They will only disappoint you. Walpole is off to see George, who will boo-hoo-hoo. George will adjourn the House for 2 weeks while we arrange a new government. Walpole will score the Earl of Orford gig and formally resign from the government. Britain's first and longest prime ministership has ended. Yeah, just a little bit of W.A. Mozart there to get us into some historical fiction. W.A. Mozart will be born pretty soon for us in the podcast years. And I guess I'm getting to the business end of book reading. I'm thinking if there's any authors I want to read, then I better get to it, because there's not that many more books I'll be reading in the rest of my life. So one author that people get very excited about that I've never bothered with is Jane Austen. And rather than read a novel, I thought I'd try a movie, just to make it easier. So I had a crack at this one called Persuasion, which was posthumously published for Jane Austen, which I never think is a good idea. I think they should only publish books that the author wants published while they're alive. So it's a romance, see? This is the thing. And it's just so frustrating because you got her, Dakota Johnson, and him, some guy, I forget his name, who I couldn't see anything in. But then what would I know? I don't understand whether blokes are good looking or not. Anyway, we've got him and her, and look, will one of them just fucking say to the other one, hey, I'm hot for you. That's all. That's all you've got to say, because they're hot for each other. But no, no, no. We have to brood in silence, and we have to suffer in silence, and all that bullshit. So, not really for me, but have a go if you like. If you want a romance, Persuasion, they get together in the end. There you go, big spoiler. Yeah, it was always going to happen. We knew the whole thing was going to happen right from the bloody start, so what's the point to it? Anyway, Persuasion, original novel by Jane Austen. But for us, it's just a matter of what we go out with. And of course, Sigur Rós have put out a new album, so naturally, we'll go out with that. The new album is Atta, and we'll be going out with a bit of the track Gold. Hope to see you next week. Bye.